Hello, and welcome to Mondays on Tuesdays on Friday. I am inspired and recording early again. I do love the idea that Mondays on Tuesdays is about how things happen, but they don't happen in the way you think and when you think. So I might kind of ditch the schedule. Speaking of schedules, I've been up in the middle of the night twice, and this will continue because I'm starting the car in the middle of the night to make sure it warms up so that we can, you know, start it in the morning. I live in Iowa, and the temperature lately is like negative 12 to negative 14 at night, which means car engines can get real cold, and we didn't have the ability to fix the starter before the winter came. So my partner has this ingenious strategy, which is when we're done driving the car, we actually open the hood, put a towel over the battery, and then one of those weird silver things that comes with like food deliveries, and then a blanket over that, and then close the hood. And this keeps the heat in the engine. And then when we go, you know, several hours later to start it again, it starts up much, much better. And this is like really interesting because cars are designed to dispel heat so they don't overheat. So they're full of air pockets and things. Of course, if you'd like your car to start better, you can try to go against the machine's design itself and put insulation in there. Now, I would like to caveat that this is not sound automotive advice. Please don't do this. Things can melt. Things can go wrong. We are taking the risks we have to, but that doesn't mean I advise doing this. There are commercially available battery blankets and things you can buy and car warmers you can plug in if your car's in a garage and all kinds of strategies. I even read somewhere that you can like put a blow dryer underneath the car and put a blanket over the entire hood and the heat from the blow dryer rises up. And there's all kinds of things you can do to get machines to behave in ways that they're not necessarily designed as a way they include, but they do perform as designed based on, you know, external factors. So I'm going to talk about the difference between getting someone to have incremental value in the direction of what you know versus trying to bring them too quickly into a 100% transfer of your consciousness and walking away with nothing. Because the choice as an educator of any kind in any scenario is not, do I transfer 100% of my consciousness to this person right now and they know everything I know? The question is, do I meet them where they are and they improve a bit, or possibly they reject what I've said and remember it later and improve a bit, or do I walk away with nothing? With a, you know, complete expectation they understand all of what I've said, and as a result of that push, they understand none of it because I didn't meet them where they were to make incremental understanding. And I find this fascinating because it you know, I've received the arrogance label a number of times. Phrases have been thrown at me like, do you want to be right or do you want to be loved? Which I think is a horrible phrase, but I think there is something underneath it that I'm going to talk about. And the update from Compare Basic is I'm getting that temple thing that I got to work, I mentioned in the last episode, into all of the original tests for that component. And oh boy, is it working. It's so nice to finally see this come together. It feels like sort of the last hurrah of the missing piece I needed to talk about this. Speaking of talking about this, I've been talking about the messaging and where I am with a few people, some new people, and one of the crowdfunders who turned me down for reinvestment a few months ago. And that was wonderful. I really mean that because it made me realize that I was trying to show something that had no value to the wrong audience. And understanding those denials and winding back into an audience which is more technical, that I can make sense of this, has reframed my messaging and my positioning. And I now finally have a complete presentation of why Seneca exists and what it does. And it's more or less a sort of combinable Lego blocks approach to software engineering versus pouring concrete with a very expensive single implementation. And, you know, I've talked in the previous podcast, episode 11, about how it's less reductive. And that is in fact true. And I'm going to talk after the break about this idea of what the what values and how to live your values. So the idea of living your values instead of lecturing your values makes sense on the surface, and it is in fact true, but I'm going to talk about why it makes sense and how deeply it makes sense in a really, I find, interesting way, and it's going to mix with patience. And to give you an idea of what I'm talking about here, so like most American romantic relationships, me and my partner come from very different backgrounds, very different economic backgrounds, somewhat different social backgrounds. And this means that I have been learning a lot from her over the years we've been together, and she has been learning a lot from me, believe it or not. And I want to talk about the idea that I had been saying things like, the way to climb out of depression is to have enough irons in the fire that you have some positive experience to sort of ignite that drive again. And it was a hard thing to explain. And the reason for that is that without a contextual situation that is genuinely good, it's hard to understand how this actually can have a benefit. And so there was a time, sometime last year, that I got real nasty about this and really regretted it. And my background in psychology has actual danger. I was suicidal. And I was diagnosed as bipolar, and then that was later revised to borderline personality disorder. And the reason I say this is that there's a real difference between moods that build and build and build, and you get so manic, you become irrational over, you know, weeks and months and years, and then you make so many horrible decisions, you hurt yourself or someone around you, and you fall into a deep depression. That's bipolar disorder. Or at least that's my understanding from knowing bipolar friends and reading the DSM. And then the personality layer of borderline is this very similar range from sort of manic to destructively depressed, but it's more like a bouncing ping pong ball. So it's up and down and all around in this, you know, 20-minute span. And that's me. You can tell somewhat if you listen to my episodes week to week. I mean, take my enthusiasm right now and then listen to the last episode and how tired I sound. And you get kind of an idea of how inconsistent I can come across. And I talk about this only because, for me, rapid changes in mood are very, very normal. And for the people around me, they are not. And what I'm talking about here in terms of living your values as a means of actually changing the world has a lot to do with the idea of incremental progress. And if you haven't had a chance to read my favorite book on the subject, I do a test. I didn't actually finish it, which I credit the author with, actually, because I got so much out of the first half of the book, I didn't feel like I had to read the second half of the book. Maybe that's odd, but the premise of the book Atomic Habits is the idea that incremental habits can drastically change your life. And there's this wonderful example of the English cycling team. And I forget the time period, but they made a ton of changes that were, you know, how they managed the bikes, how they trained, how they tracked this, how they did that, all a whole bunch of small, seemingly boring things. And it made them from an almost always losing team into a championship team. And the magic here is there's no real, like, magic strategy. There's no, you know, Six Sigma or Agile framework. You know, there's no magic sauce here. It's just a series of incremental habits that absolutely make sense, that have a, you know, compounding sort of exponential effect that leads to real success. And I think that when we know something, which is the case for absolutely everyone, I mean, we have our own perspective. And so inevitably, when you're in a room, there is always something that someone knows more than everyone else in the room. I really don't like the idea that you have, you know, experts and novices. I think everybody has an insight from their background and the way their mind works that makes them an expert in something about what you're doing. And the idea of incremental knowledge is not really, it's not talked about that much. And I'm a big believer in incremental knowledge. It goes about like this. If I were to say the way to dig yourself out of depression is to have small wins that confirm a more effective story in your mind than the story you usually tell yourself derived from your circumstances. This is kind of the core of cognitive behavior therapy, but that is such an intangible concept that I am now having the experience of having said things like this and they didn't click in, and I was so upset. And there's a lot on the line here, because depression in anyone can get quite dangerous. But now I'm starting to see in someone that I care deeply about that this strategy of warming up the car has given them so much confidence. They're like, oh, I'm overcoming challenges. It feels so good. And for me, it's been a year of patience that I in no way resent. And the reason I say that is I could go to her and be like, I said that a year and a half ago. But if the goal is to empower this person I care about, that's really bad and unnecessary. And the reality is that this is such a critical concept for businesses to manage their staff over time, is the idea that when you have some strategy objective, it's crucially important to understand that the dissemination of that strategy will be a gradual absorption process. This is not the wicking candle that can absorb the oil in the lamp quickly and shine a bright flame. This is more like the sort of gradual absorption of a sponge that starts absorbing a little bit of moisture, a little bit more moisture, a little bit more moisture. And so here's how that goes. It takes experiential evidence for people to absorb the facts around them. And so the way to do education and knowledge transfer of any kind is to live your values and wait for people to come to you and say, how did you do that? I like what you're on about. Tell me how you got from where you are to now. Because I know firsthand, receiving those, you know, knowledge label, or arrogance labels, and receiving those, do you want to be loved or do you want to be right labels? A lot of it has to do with me saying, I come from this perspective, here's how you do it. And it doesn't work. And if you've ever been in a management position and you've seen something before and you're trying to say, wow, team, don't do this. And the team says, huh? And they do it anyway. That's partially because it may take several months to get them on board, because they're coming from their perspective. They need to hear the circumstances, have a discussion about the circumstances, and take a little bit at a time. And so the reason I feel like living your values is the best way to do education over a period of time is because when you are the one who is excited in the room and has survived depression, and people come to you with their concern, and you can meet them where they are, they'll say something like, well, I don't really feel like I have any options to improve this project, because I don't know how. Let's take an example. Let's say we're building a mobile app, right? Something people like or something people hate, depending on who you are, depending on how many apps you have on your phone that you don't use. So we're building an app, and we're trying to get the app to sign in to a service that the user has already signed into, but we don't know how to do it. Well, I can start talking about all the details of OAuth and all the importance of handshakes and all the trade-offs of iframes and all these things and just confuse the absolute crap out of the person I'm working with. Or I can say, well, what do you think a login system does? Because what we really have to make sure is that it's secure and not repetitive. And then hear where the person's coming from. And they may say, well, I understand how to reach out to the server. I understand what we have to save when we log in, but I don't understand how to get that into the next service. And then in this fictional scenario, we would have a conversation about iframes and iframe cookie security policies. And I would know where they are in this spectrum to talk to them about it. Now, it is highly likely that there will be something in this conversation they will miss. And they will go off into their corner and build what they can and then come back and say, I got it to this point. How do I get to the next point? And here's what's really important about this. If this education process goes well, what this person is doing is slowly drip feeding a situation that I, as someone with some experience in this area is familiar with into their picture of the world. And this is why I believe in living my values rather than lecturing my values. Because the real win in education or knowledge transfer of any time is not to copy and paste what's in my mind into someone else's mind. Because my mind has references to my experience. My mind has references to the way that I think. The actual process of education and knowledge transfer is to break down what I have experienced or what you have experienced and transfer it in pieces such that it can reintegrate into the other person's identity, such that it can integrate into things that they value and things that they can connect to real meaning. And this process takes time. And when you do that, something magical happens, which is they can take the value that you're transmitting, connect it to their experience, connect it to their identity, integrate it in there, and then share back to you things from their experience and their values that you can integrate into yours. And so if you ever want knowledge transfer to be a two-way street, it is very important to understand that patience is a part of this process and that walking away with an incremental improvement is your only option. Walking away with 100% like transmitting your consciousness to theirs is a great way to walk away with nothing. So true to form on this podcast, I'm going to pull it back to a product I'm building, even though originally I kept talking about, I'm not going to talk about my company after the 5 minute mark. But one of the metaphors that I'm using for this ecosystem, and I'm very excited to have some more exciting stuff about that coming out. You know, it's less reductive. It depends on sort of managing the mess where it is rather than break it into small, you know, reductive steps. But it's the idea of, are you building something out of Lego blocks that can be rearranged, or are you pouring something in concrete? And the idea of this is, have your engineers built a page that cannot be repurposed, and so the next time you need to do that, you build another page, right? The cost doesn't go down per iteration, per feature. It may actually go up, because as you layer things, they have things that are connected, and now your cost surface is actually increasing, not decreasing. Not wonderful. And the idea is the page made of components that generate the page, and you can rearrange them quickly to solve, you know, additional use cases for your business? And that goes all the way down, almost down to the ones and zeros, because the Seneca runtime and the Seneca language, which has not yet been developed because I've been working so much on getting a fantastic core. And it's a good thing I didn't write the language, because conceptually it's actually going to end up being even more different than I thought it was. But the idea of this, you know, Lego blocks versus pouring in concrete is what I'm working on at the programming language level is this idea of, you know, rearrangeable composable parts instead of, you know, hard coding something out. And programming has always been about this. It's always been about overlapping patterns, reusable efficiency, you know, DIY, don't repeat yourself, or DRY, sorry, DIY is like the punk ethos of do it yourself. DRY is don't repeat yourself. You know, those ethoses have been there, but the real level of power in computing is not just don't repeat yourself, but don't back yourself into a non-reusable corner, right? It's great that you don't repeat yourself, but can you reuse? That's the real magic of like of sort of computing power. And not only are the programming tools designed to do that, but it is designed to do that at the user experience level as well. So, you know, like sortable boxes rather than giant lists, you know, nodal network configurations rather than sort of hard-coded, you know, two-dimensional spreadsheets. The option to combine criteria across many, many pages instead of evaluating each page entirely on what's on that page. These kind of consistency things bring this idea of meeting the mess where it is, not just from the programming level, but up into the business case level of interactivity. And I'm going to bring this back to what I said about sort of what the what values, which is, you know, one of my values is letting people be creative and not dictating how they work. And, you know, leading by example in the programming level and then up into the user experience level makes sense. But the real empowering point of Compare Basic Software is when people begin to realize that they can, in fact, configure their system for their staff at any given time. Because learning is incremental, because knowledge is incremental, because improvement is incremental, all of these systems are designed to be something you can customize for your team's workflow. You know, if it's a project management system, you customize the ticket categories that you need and you visualize the flow that you need. Similarly to ticket systems, if it's a restaurant, you know, point of sale system, the servers and the chef and the line cooks can organize the ticket system to reflect the work that they are doing. And it's friendly and welcoming enough that as the work changes, as the restaurant flow changes, those things can be adjusted. So it's not just an idea of non-reductive programming where you meet the mess where it is, and it has the sort of glass bottom boat effect where if you're the engineer, you can see all the way down to the ones and zeros. But it's also non-reductive in terms of how it thinks about what work is. The idea that buying a system that is kind of cast in concrete and more or less stays the way it is the day you bought it because it's just so hard to figure out, or something that has these composable sort of Lego block parts that your team can configure how it works, that the reporting that you get from your data visualization and accounting system can evaluate your business as it moves from, you know, different markets. Or as markets change, as, you know, as the cost of items for your business goes up or down, or the cost of ingredients for your restaurant goes up or down, or the cost of some specialized labor goes up or down. This whole idea of living your values instead of lecturing your values maps a bit into my idea of what I believe is the narcissism that has creeped into the software industry, which is companies kind of sell a, we tell you how to think because we have the insights and the ideal ways of working. That's kind of, well, it's crappy. And so this whole idea of living your values and letting people see an accomplishment and incrementally influence them so they can work it into their pattern, it kind of connects to the whole premise of, you know, moving the what I consider superior user experience from creative software such as Ardour in video editing, OBS Studio in video editing. Ardour, I think I mentioned it was video editing. It's audio, sorry. Ardour is like MIDI composing and recording studio sessions. And then Blender and 3D graphics. And when I stack that up against like some of the more businessy tools, even like, you know, a lot of the Adobe suite, like the Photoshop, the Premieres of the world, and it's been a very long time since I use Apple products, but the Final Cut Pro, I put in that same category of like sort of businessy strict things. And then you go up against, you know, the Microsoft suite and, you know, Word and Excel and all those kinds of things. And there's almost this like implied idea in the menus from my perspective, in the way things are organized. Again, all of this product reviews from my perspective. There's an implication that you are doing a fixed set of things, whereas in these creative tools that I mentioned before in video, audio engineering, and 3D graphics, there's a focus much, much more on composition. And I think composition fits into that idea of, you know, demonstrate or have faith that people can understand and work in incremental ways rather than, you know, big wall of a lecture. Yeah, that's what's on my mind. And while I am excited about this idea of, you know, incremental value, and it, you know, sounds philosophical and whatever, there's really a whole lot here, and I plan to connect it into Seriously Human and kind of some of the things that are happening in the economy. And yeah, it's all for now. I'll see you whenever I see you, because I don't tend to record these things regularly in terms of waiting a week anymore.